Welcome to Great Minds with Lost and Found, the podcast that connects people and reimagines systems to improve mental health for youth and young adults. I'm your host, Joel Kaskinen. Lost and Found is a comprehensive nonprofit organization that aims to do more to eliminate suicide for youth and young adults in the United States. Now that you know who we are and what we're all about, let's get to the show. Welcome back to Great Minds with Lost and Found, the podcast where we connect people and reimagine systems to improve mental health systems. All right, today we have Cody Engel, our newest hire with Lost and Found, and someone who is representing the board for Sioux Falls Pride. This is our Pride Month episode, so welcome, Cody.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really excited to be here.
Heck yeah. Do you want to start with just a brief introduction of who you are, how you came to be with Lost and Found, how you came to be part of the team with Sioux Falls Pride, and then kind of like what your work entails, just really quickly?
Sure. Yeah. So my name is Cody. Yep. I moved here to Sioux Falls in 2014 and just kind of was pursuing some different career paths and ended up working for in the healthcare field and really started to get passionate about data collection, data analysis, which is led me to pursue an MPH, Master of Public Health, through the University of North Dakota, specializing in research and analytics. And so kind of through that, I got connected to Lost and Found for an internship, and turns out that y'all were hiring for a position. And so I applied for it and got it. I'm super excited to be a part of the team and to work in the research and evaluation field to help bring data to really perpetuate change, honestly, is really what my passion is about. And I've been with Sioux Falls Pride since 2018. I am now on the board of directors. I am, last year I was the vice president, this year I'm the secretary. I organized the first Pride Parade here in Sioux Falls too, which was just
a really cool
experience. Just getting together with the community and businesses, and everybody was so supportive that year and have been the following years as well.
Yeah. And we're bringing the parade back after a little hiatus due to the pandemic. So obviously we're excited about that. So what does the parade look like this year and the festival?
Yeah, so the parade this year, we traditionally have had it down Phillips Avenue, but due to some construction concerns, we've shifted over to 8th Street. So we'll have, there's so many businesses and individuals, nonprofits that are a part of the parade this year. We have right around 40 to 45 entries total, which is really exciting for a parade that's only in its third year, you know. And we have so many different types of floats and cars, walking groups, some animal groups, just some really cool floats that are going to be there and entries that are all coming to celebrate Pride and to celebrate the LGBTQ plus and Two-Spirit community. And the festival is now at 8th and Railroad as well. So we've had to shift from Terrace Park because we have outgrown that space, which is a really cool problem
to
have.
It's a great problem to have.
Like, we're not complaining about it. And so we've been working with the city, and they, you know, they've tried to find spaces for us. Luckily, 8th and Railroad was available. We, Remedy Brewing Company, they really helped us to secure that spot. Aaron Nelson there did. So
Aaron's great.
He's so wonderful. Yes. And he really was on the ground and just did a lot of moving and shaking to get us to secure us that spot. So
that's so cool. Well, the reason I ask you to give a little bit of background on this year's Pride Parade and Festival is because obviously we're here to talk about mental health and how that relates to Pride Month and the queer community. And so knowing your work and knowing your background, I want to dive into the history of Pride a little bit and what that means for people who are part of the community as well as allies, and all of that kind of intersecting with the mental health ecosystem and how we can do better to support our queer friends and neighbors. So Pride is, you know, rooted in obviously years and years and years of history, but it started as a protest at Stonewall Inn. Can you just kind of share a brief synopsis of what happened, how that came to fruition now to what we know Pride as, like, big celebrations? Where was that change? What did it look like? Just talk us through some of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and this is one of my favorite subjects to talk about. I think a lot of people don't quite know the whole history of Pride and where it started and how we've grown into this wonderful community of Pride events across the country and the world. So really in the United States, the Pride movement started at Stonewall Inn. You'll often hear it, you know, referred to as Stonewall. And that actually happened on June 28th of 1969 was the date that the Stonewall Uprising is marked as happening. So a little bit of background into that history. For the longest time, the LGBTQ plus and Two-Spirit community were really targeted and discriminated against across the United States. So really, the only safe space for them were in gay bars and bars that were open and accepting to having people of the queer community sure. into them. So the events leading up to Stonewall, a lot of people in the community were arrested. They were targeted and followed by law enforcement to be tricked, essentially, into being arrested. It was illegal to be queer. And so the Stonewall Inn was a really popular bar spot in Greenwich Village. And this was, again, one of the safe havens for the queer community. And on that particular night, there was a raid on the bar, and a lot of the community was in there, and some violence started to incur between law enforcement and the patrons at the bar. And this is really where the protest and uprising began. It was a moment and a point in time where the community really decided that enough was enough, and that they were really tired of having to hide themselves and having to pretend to be something they're not, to not be able to live authentically, to be as targeted as they were. So the Stonewall Uprising was really the beginning of a domino effect of events that now, for the past 50-something years, have continued to take place. And that uprising, really, we in the community are very thankful for the Black trans women that are kind of the people that really started all of this. We owe a lot of our rights to the trans community.
Absolutely.
And so from that moment forward, the very next year, there was something called Christopher Street Liberation Day, which can be known as almost the first Pride Parade. It was in remembrance of the uprising that had happened. And so from that moment forward, we've had a lot of different groups, but that's where Pride is really rooted in. That's why we celebrate a lot of organizations and Pride organizations celebrate Pride in June, because that is when the Stonewall Uprising, that's what it's known for.
Totally. So it kind of went from this, you know, protest, raid, you know, fight for freedoms and liberties to celebrations. And that started with community gatherings. Which is why, you know, we now see festivals and parades, because it's gathering spaces. It's time for us to come together as community and celebrate the accomplishments that we have, you know, achieved over the last 50 some odd years. I'm not going to do math. You're not going to do math, but, you know, it's been a long time. So, you know, celebrating accomplishments is something that we should take pride in and really focus on during Pride Month. So, in your experience and the work that you've done, you know, knowing some of this data, talk us through some accomplishments that have happened for the queer community here in Sioux Falls.
Yeah, I think that we have seen definitely some improvements for the community here in Sioux Falls, particularly. I think one of the accomplishments that we were able to do is to have a Pride Parade. That was something that was decided by the Board of Directors when I first began to get involved with Pride. So I wasn't a part of the decision making there, but they really felt like it was time as an organization and as a community to have that. And that is a really important step forward, I think, for us to, again, it's a moment of visibility and it's a moment of celebration and a gathering to really celebrate the community. So we've seen a lot of success there. Sioux Falls Pride has really seen success growing as an organization and as an event. We, if you look at the history of Sioux Falls Pride, you know, there's a history of starting off in a parking lot with very few people coming together and gathering to what we've become now as an organization that draws in nearly 12 to 15,000 people.
Yeah.
And so hearing about that growth is a really encouraging statement, I think, for the community to know and to understand.
Absolutely.
And for the queer community, we've seen other organizations really come up and begin to have these celebrations and to have this advocacy work and gatherings as well. Organizations like the Transformation Project that really work with the trans community, which is a particularly traditionally underrepresented group, even within the LGBTQ plus and Two-Spirit community. So to see the success that we've had as a community with gatherings, with organizations, working with the city and building a relationship with the city in order to have these events, and being able to have an entire week where businesses are open and accepting. You know, if you go to downtown Sioux Falls, you see a variety of organizations and businesses that are flying pride flags and flying the trans flag. And so to see that continue to grow, I think is a really successful accomplishment for the community.
For sure. Now, I think it's really cool. So I'm new to Sioux Falls, obviously. I think it's really cool. And something that I've noticed that I haven't seen in other places that I've lived is the pride flags stay up year round in a lot of these businesses and organizations downtown. And like, I guess I'm not used to that. And I, like, it was something that I was pleasantly surprised by when I moved here. Is that just ingrained in the culture here? Or is it because, like, downtown is very progressive and inclusive? Or is that something that you've noticed in other places that you've lived?
I haven't noticed it in other places I've lived either. I think that is, and I'm not saying there's other cities that don't do that, but I think that really speaks to the culture of downtown Sioux Falls. Yeah. You don't really see it necessarily outside of downtown Sioux Falls where the pride flag is so prominent and so year round. And I think that the reason for that being is that the organizations that have built themselves downtown have really strived and wanted to be inclusive to all and equitable to all. And so them having the pride flag out all year round is just another sign of visibility, creating that safe space. Even if they don't have a flag out, you'll see a lot of businesses that have signage that make sure that people understand that this is a safe space. Mm-hmm. And really for the queer community, especially in a state like South Dakota, where sometimes it might feel unsafe, to have that visual and that recognition is really important. So it's definitely something that I am happy to see in Sioux Falls and that I haven't really seen anywhere else I've lived either.
Yeah, I would agree. And that's why I wanted to point it out and make, you know, some comments towards it on the podcast today, you know, like publicly emphasizing that's something that we do really well. And that's, it's really cool. So moving forward from kind of like the history and the celebrations that we have, you know, accomplished here in our community, I want to jump into the work that we do with Lost and Found and the work that you've done with Pride and the work that you've done in terms of like data and survey and research, because that's something that you're passionate about. You know, like you're doing this for school. And so I want to dive into that a little bit further. So obviously, we know the data shows that LGBTQ plus people are historically underrepresented, especially in communities like rural areas like South Dakota, Sioux Falls, etc. So what is, from your experience or from data that you have seen, what is something that we as an organization, but also just as allies and people that are part of this community, can do better?
Yeah, I think if you look at a lot of the data, there are obviously the rates that are higher within the community. And a lot of that data shows that it's not due to orientation or gender identity. It's due to this idea of acceptance, social acceptance, parental acceptance, friend acceptance. So one of the things that I think organizations like Lost and Found can do, and one of the things that Pride has really strived to do as well, is this idea of visibility. And I think that acknowledging the community, showing up to support the community is so important. I think that is, honestly, that is one of the things that is underlooked, is on the fact of just showing up. Yeah. A lot of times people will ask, well, what can I do? Like, how can I support the community? What can I do, like, with my time? And while we love volunteers, the biggest thing that people can do and the biggest thing that organizations can do is just to show up, to show the community that there's so many people and so many businesses and so many individuals that really do care for this community and that want to connect with them and that want to just be a part of the community as well, including allies. And so I think that's one of the best things that anyone can do, is to show up to events and to speak out when you hear derogatory terms or if you hear somebody speaking negatively. I think speaking up and speaking out about it, it makes the conversation normal for other people to feel comfortable to do the same.
Totally. And then personally, this is my belief, but it's also, you know, rooted in evidence. And that's something that it's important to us in Lost and Found, is, you know, practicing evidence-based practices and policies and, you know, really enforcing those. And so for me, it's like, I think about historically, youth specifically who are part of the queer community are at greater risks of suicide and mental health conditions. And so obviously that's something that we need to be focused on as a suicide prevention organization. Do you see any like gaps in services and programs that are being provided? Maybe it's not by us, but like just in general in the Sioux Falls community that we could do better at in terms of serving youth in our community and supporting, or is it just really just showing up and showing out and being, you know, saying that we're accepting and, you know, just showing up really, like you said, like, I can't even put it in better terms because you have said it so well, but is there something that we're missing? Is there gaps that we need to close?
Yes, I think it's a both and approach for, especially concerning youth and LGBTQ plus and two-spirit youth. I think showing up is probably one of the greatest things that you can do as far as taking a step forward in creating an environment that is open and welcoming. Mm-hmm. We do have services and gaps in services. I think that as a community, we could probably try to do better at, I think programming, and again, at Pride, we really tried to start to implement these things as programming geared specifically for LGBTQ plus mm-hmm. and two-spirit youth. And having, again, those safe spaces for them to come and be welcome and to just be able to be themselves. Oftentimes there are individuals who are part of the community in school that aren't even out to anybody. Sure. And so to have a space where they can maybe explore the safety of coming out to somebody is really important. And I don't think we necessarily have that space right now here in Sioux Falls. I think organizations are really working hard to create spaces like that. And I think that we can continue to try to provide those services. I think, you know, speaking from a mental health perspective, again, creating services that LGBTQ plus and two-spirit youth know that they can go to and know that there is a person there that is mm-hmm. affirming and that is willing to work with them with gender identity and sexual orientation is really important. And evidence shows that a lot of the reasons that LGBTQ plus and two-spirit youth don't seek mental health is because they have a fear of talking about it. They have a fear of discussing it. They have a fear of being outed. And so the data shows that those are a lot of the things that are running through a youth's mind when they think about mental health and talking about it. And I think that, again, businesses providing those services, being vocal about it, mm-hmm. and creating those spaces are some of the gaps that we can fill in here in the community.
Yeah, that's great. So, and jumping back into the evidence, you know, we both have seen these numbers, and an organization that I believe does a really good job of reporting is the Trevor Project.
Yes.
And so, you know, obviously you and I have talked about this, and other people in our organization with Lost and Found have talked about this, but the 2022 survey that they just pushed out from the Trevor Project about the risks that youth in the queer community face, I think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about this. And obviously living in a state like South Dakota, where it is more fearful to talk about these sorts of more progressive, more social justice related issues, I think it's really important that we do talk about it in our line of work. And so I just want to like paint a picture real quickly. So, you know, 45% of LGBTQ youth seriously considered suicide in the last year, including more than half of transgender and non-binary youth, and that's 53%. And that's nationally in the U.S. I don't have the numbers for South Dakota. I don't know if you have those numbers either, but I mean, I would assume those numbers are really high. The last projected numbers that I saw from South Dakota Suicide Prevention, they were releasing that we are like seventh or eighth in the country in terms of deaths by suicide, and our youth tend to, I want to say it's 29, don't quote me on that, but I want to say it's 10 to 29. Those two, demographics really spiked in the last year. I mean, that's wild, but I just think that we have to paint this picture and we have to share these statistics, because those coupled with the stories that we're hearing from trans, non-binary, queer youth are what's really going to save people. You know, we're going to prevent suicide by sharing these numbers and sharing these stories and perspectives. So I just think it's really important to to share these facts. Another one is 14% of LGBTQ youth attempted suicide in the past year. Obviously, we've seen those numbers increase due to the pandemic, but I mean, 14%, like, that's a huge number. We have to be doing better than this. So I don't know. I guess I just share this to, again, paint a picture and, like, put these numbers out there into the world for our listeners to hear. But do you have any, like, other important facts or figures that you want to share or anything that you've seen recently that would, like, kind of emphasize this point that we're trying to make?
No, I think these statistics are really important for people to understand. As you hear that LGBTQ plus and Two-Spirit youth are more, that they have higher rates of attempted suicide or suicidal ideation. But to hear the statistics of, you know, 45% in the United States considered suicide in the past year, like, that's an alarming statistic to have.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yes, and the Trevor Project really does a great job of really detailing those numbers and understanding where their numbers came from. And as far as South Dakota goes, there was some data released suggesting that South Dakota does have one of the highest rates of anxiety and depression among LGBTQ plus and Two-Spirit youth in the nation. And so I can't remember exactly where those numbers came from, but there was a study released that was suggesting that these numbers are higher than what you would traditionally see across the United States. So again, it's really important for this state to talk about, for Sioux Falls to talk about, because those numbers are alarming nationally, and they're almost, you know, they're very alarming within our state.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, just beyond alarming. And I want to not get too political here, but I definitely want to, you know, talk about how part of our framework in preventing suicide is creating inclusive policies and practices. Mm-hmm. And so obviously that's stuff that our state legislature needs to consider. And obviously, that work also starts in grassroots movements with organizations like Pride, with organizations like Lost and Found. And so I just, you know, I personally, that's a space that I'm very vocally prevalent in. You know, I have a voice. I do have some platform and some privilege that I want to use, as do you and as do all of the people within Lost and Found. And so that's a space that we need to be in. And I think that, like, sharing these numbers and these stories in those spaces is really important.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, again, tying back some more data here, we use the CDC's seven principles, or seven strategies rather than principles, for suicide prevention. One of those is creating community and a sense of belonging. You know, there's another one that's economic supports and, you know, creating more inclusive access to healthcare and, you know, other economic structures and systems. So I just want to point out one last statistic, but from the last CDC survey, 25% of young adults ages 18 to 24 considered suicide in the 2021 survey from the CDC. And that's in the height of the pandemic. So again, to that point that I said earlier, but 2016-17 survey of college students, so about that same age of 18 to 24, found that only 11% considered suicide. So we went from 11 to 25 in a handful of years. Like, that is wild. And, you know, like, obviously political structures are a piece of that, and the way of the world culturally, as we're entering and exiting a global pandemic, like, that's huge. But yeah, I feel like, again, we have to share these statistics. So yeah, it's just wild. But do you have any other thoughts in terms of statistics or, you know, stories, anecdotes that you want to share?
No, again, I just think that these are very important to understand. You know, it's important to understand these numbers and why it's important to understand that this is why organizations like Lost and Found, like Pride, like the Transformation Project exist, because we're trying to lower these numbers. We're trying to create those spaces that youth can come to and feel open or feel welcome, feel accepted. And those are so vital to helping to encourage the LGBTQ plus and Two-Spirit community.
Totally. And this thought just crossed my mind, and you've said it a couple of times, the word Two-Spirit, the phrase Two-Spirit, mm-hmm. Maybe some of our listeners don't know what that means. Would you just give a, like, quick synopsis or definition of what that is?
Yeah. Two-Spirit is something that, we at Pride too, especially, are trying to include in our language. So, it really is in the Native American community that, Two-Spirit is an identity of, that, you know, historically you can go back and kind of look at what the beliefs here are. And Two-Spirit people were oftentimes like leaders and shamans and healers. And to kind of summarize it, it's essentially an idea that, you know, one person can inhabit both a masculine and feminine spirit. And so to be Two-Spirit is to have that identity. And so that is really our, that's really a way to include within the LGBTQ plus community, to include the Indigenous community as well.
Absolutely. Well, and it's so important to include them. And the reason I bring it up is because we are a state in which we do not particularly care for or treat well our Indigenous neighbors, yes, and community members. And so being that both Native and Indigenous people and queer people in our state have such high rates of suicide attempts, suicide deaths, we have to share that. And yes, again, like, that's why I wanted you to define that, because if anyone is listening today and doesn't know what Two-Spirit means or what that identity really embodies, or, you know, especially is connected to both Native populations and queer populations, I think we're not doing our job and we're not serving both of those populations appropriately if we're not sharing that. So thank you for kind of defining that for us. So another thing I wanted to just go over is, you know, suicide risk, obviously, is something that we talk about in our work. And it's important to know not only the risk factors, but the things that move risks, you know, we decrease risks. Mm-hmm. So as we're thinking about that, you know, sexual orientation, gender identity, those are higher risks. And people, yes, are mistreated and stigmatized in our society. Do you have any data that, like, backs up, you know, why that may be? Or do you have any stories that back that up, just from personal experience or work with Pride? Or
yeah, so I think, you know, sexual orientation and gender identity are higher risk. Again, we kind of talked about it earlier, but it is that idea of stigmatization and you know, being traditionally underrepresented, mm-hmm, that causes these risk factors to increase. There are statistics out there. Again, a lot of these statistics come from the Trevor Project, but there's statistics out there that show, you know, if a trans person has a community of people that correctly uses their correct pronouns, mm-hmm, their risk for suicide ideation and depression decreases significantly. If, you know, people of differing sexual orientations have, again, a lot of this is tied in with family, mm-hmm, have family members that accept that orientation, their risk of suicide is decreased as well. And I think that that can be seen in a lot of the stories that we hear at Pride of individuals who have both had great experiences with coming out and horrible experiences with coming out. And you see that we can't stereotype and say everybody that had a good experience, you know, doesn't have a risk for having depression, anxiety, or suicidal, yeah, ideation, and vice versa. But what we do see is that when there is a supportive community within the family, that those rates tend to lower and the feeling of acceptance tends to higher. What family rejection does is it creates a sense of isolation.
Absolutely.
And there are statistics out there that an organization that works with homeless youth, particularly, their name is slipping my mind right now, but the statistics show that of houseless youth, a majority of them are part of the LGBTQ plus and Two-Spirit, yeah, community, more than half. Yeah. I believe the numbers are actually upwards of 60 to 70% of houseless youth are part of the LGBTQ plus and Two-Spirit community.
It's just like so devastating.
Yes. So we can see why family rejection plays this huge factor in increasing risk of suicidal ideation or suicide attempts, because when you don't have that sense of community that starts with your family, and then on top of that, you add even communities, towns, or states that also don't really bring that sense of acceptance, that's kind of where the data points, is that the more feeling of isolation and rejection that it, that LGBTQ plus people and really individuals in general feel, the risk increases with that. Yeah. I think that's important. I mean,
that just makes sense.
Right.
Like, I feel like a lay person who isn't in this world, you know, maybe they're not part of our community or in the suicide prevention space, but just any lay person, that should be common sense. You know, like, you don't have a sense of belonging or a sense of place, you're going to be like more isolated and have this sense of marginalization, you know, like, of course, that's going to increase your risk of suicide ideation or suicide attempt. And it just, it's so sad that, like, we still live in a world that doesn't see that so clearly. I want to talk a little bit further in about the social support. Sure. And kind of what we do with Lost and Found to support queer youth. You're new to the organization. I'm pretty new to the organization as well. But I think, you know, one thing that we do really, really well is talking about statistics and stories and experiences of queer youth. You know, we work with 10 to 34 year olds, and a large majority of people that we work with identify as being part of the queer community. That's because they are, you know, young people, and they are exploring, and, you know, maybe they don't fully identify with it, but they're dabbling or, you know, experiencing some sort of anxiety and depression related to their friends or family being part of the queer community. And so I think that what we really do well with Lost and Found is providing services and programs on college campuses and to youth and their support systems to really enhance a sense of belonging. So yeah, I think, again, tying it right back into the social support piece, I think that we as Lost and Found staffers have to continue sharing what it is we do. I would like to see us increase our work specifically for LGBTQ plus, you know, two-spirit, trans, whatever. I want us to really focus on, you know, creating specific programs and services. And I don't know what that is going to look like in the future, but that's something that I can see us kind of jumping into. But from your perspective, again, as a new person joining our org, is there anything that you've seen that we are doing really well, or on the flip side of it, that we can improve upon?
Yes, I think, you know, one of the things that Lost and Found does really well and continues to do really well is to have the conversation about it, have the conversation really about mental health and about mental health, suicide, because a lot of the times that conversation is not heard. And I think even within the LGBTQ plus and two-spirit community, within Pride, it's something that we as Pride also are really looking at too, is how do we have this conversation about mental health? Because, again, we talked about this earlier, but just to reiterate that a lot of youth that don't receive mental health care, one of the things that really prevents them is that fear. So mm-hmm. a fear of having the conversation, a fear of having a discussion about mental health. And so I think the Trevor Project statistic said that 82% of all LGBTQ plus youth wanted mental health care, and 60% that did not receive it. And the biggest factor was that fear. So what Lost and Found does really well is bringing the conversation to the front and bringing the conversation forward to say, we can talk about this. Mm-hmm. It's okay. It's okay to talk about mental health. It's okay to talk about feeling isolated. It's okay to do all of these things. And I think that's something, again, that being very new, that I've seen and that I see the organization continually doing. I think it's important to keep that up. And I think, you know, again, showing up to spaces is something Lost and Found does really well. Going to community events, having a presence, again, those are all really important things for the queer community to have. And I would agree that, you know, having specific services is something to look forward to in the future as organization continues to grow and builds capacity and really can do those things. I think that's another important factor to take into consideration. But
yeah, when I think of, as someone who's been in the organization for a year now, when I think of our advocates program and how we've started catering it not only to college students, but, you know, a little bit more focused for our tech students, a little bit more focused for our student athletes. I think that's a great place to start for our queer neighbors. You know, maybe we cater an advocates program to Pride, or we cater it to the Transformation Project or Equality South Dakota. But I think that would be a great starting point, you know, for us as an organization to lean into a little bit. Again, I don't know what that will look like in the future. This is just you and I, you know,
right,
talking about it here and brainstorming. But, you know, I think it's really important to get perspectives like that. And so it's something that, like, I think that we could do really, really easily and effectively.
Yeah, I agree.
So kind of wrapping things up here, I want to talk current trends in our community, things that have happened that have directly impacted the queer community, and things that we as an organization have had responses in, but I think that we could be more proactive instead of reactive in this space. So two kind of things that have happened recently was a letter from a Watertown teacher that was sent to students about how they did not believe that the queer identifying student in their classroom, I believe they were trans, that they did not believe that that was correct and that they were not going to use the correct pronouns and they were not going to like support that person's name change and all of that jazz. And so that's one event that has happened. And then the other is obviously legislation. We were the very first state in the 2022 legislative session to push forward and turn from law, a bill into law, anti-trans legislation. And so obviously we're kind of setting the standard here. This is happening in our state, in our communities, the places that we are part of, the places that we call home, the places and people that we love are being impacted. And so I want to talk about that. What is Pride doing in response to that? What are we doing in response to that as Lost and Found? And how can we better be proactive instead of reactive so that when things like this do happen, we know how to respond rather than just like trying to come up with a quick statement or a press release or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I think that is probably one of another really important part of the puzzle that we are really trying to work on. You know, Pride for this past year, we partnered with the Transformation Project and Equality South Dakota. And we actually hired a lobbyist to go to peer and really for LGBTQ plus and two-spirit rights. We knew these bills were coming. These bills come every single year. And one of the things that Pride does is we partner with other organizations that can really put a lot of the power behind trying to stop these bills. You know, as a 501c3 with Pride, there's only so much we can do politically. And so what we do is partner with other organizations that can really put the power behind it. So one of the things we were able to do, again, is to hire that lobbyist. And we did see that bill get passed, and that is unfortunate. Again, that is something that the trans community, it's something that is that really affects the trans community, and that, again, it causes that sense of otherness almost. And again, going back to statistics, if you can't tell, I love statistics.
From it's almost like we hired you to do research and data.
Weird. But in the survey for the Trevor Project, one of the statistics is that around 80% of youth, specifically transgender youth, were worried about legislation that would prevent them from participating in sports that match their gender. And so we saw that come to fruition this year. We see that this affects, this really affects youth. This causes youth to not want to stay in the state. You know, a few years ago, there was a study showing how many people were leaving the state of South Dakota. They called it the brain drain. I don't think that's a great term, but essentially what's happening is the state is creating legislation that is causing people to leave because, again, going back to community, there's not a sense of community. There's not a sense of belonging. I think every year for the past 7 to 8 years, there has been some kind of anti-trans legislation put into our legislature. And so imagine being a trans person and living in a state where every single year you're forced to hear about how there's something wrong with you, how you have a mental illness, even. That's been thrown around in our legislature before. You're a child.
Like, yes, I do have mental illness. It's called anxiety because of you.
Right, exactly. you know, we've had, you know, we've had legislators say just horrible things about particularly trans youth. And that really affects, again, that affects who wants to stay here. It affects belonging. It affects rates of anxiety, rates of depression, that feeling of isolation. Those are all things that really trickle down. And the same thing can be said for this letter that was sent by this teacher in Watertown at a public school. And again, a school is a place where youth should be able to come and feel welcome and feel accepting. Education should be something that is given equitably to every single person, regardless of what your orientation or gender identity is. And so I think what organizations can do is, again, kind of keep an eye on what's coming. You hear a lot of talk and whispers of legislation that's coming, of initiatives that are going to be rolled out through various politicians. And so I think what Pride is trying to do and what Lost and Found can do is kind of have an ear open for what is coming down, so that as 501c3 organizations, we can do as much as possible and as much that is in our power to try to prevent these things from passing and these things from happening.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, education is another piece that we can do really well. Areas like South Dakota is still a state that allows for conversion therapy, which is a whole other topic that dramatically increases suicidal ideation and suicide attempts. You know, I think there are, in this last survey, there were of responses, almost 6,000 youth who were subjected to conversion therapy. And every study and every data source out there says that this is something that is really detrimental to the health and wellness of LGBTQ plus and Two-Spirit youth. Yeah. It increases ideation, it increases depression. And so again, kind of bringing awareness to that. Sometimes when I talk about conversion therapy, people don't know what it is. And it's essentially the idea of that orientation and gender identity are something that need to be fixed. And so it's a type of not usually licensed therapy that tries to essentially change somebody's orientation or change somebody's gender identity. So South Dakota is a state that still allows that. And so again, organizations can kind of be at the forefront of educating people about it, and also trying to enact policies that make it so that it's not possible to happen.
Definitely. Well, I think just for sake of time, we've covered a lot already here in this conversation. We will get into way more of it, I'm sure. But do you have any final thoughts or, you know, things that you want to share with our listeners today as it relates to Pride, to mental health, to suicide prevention, to our work with Lost and Found, or just in general, what people who are listening can do as individuals and community members that they can do to help?
Yeah, I think, again, celebrating Pride with the community is such a great start. And I think also remembering that oftentimes it's joked in the community that, oh, we have a whole month of June where everybody loves us, and then we go out of June and nobody cares anymore. And so I think just remembering that there are things you can do outside of Pride Month to support the community, showing up to those spaces, being an advocate and an ally for the community is really important. And I think getting involved to everybody's capability and capacity too, whether that be volunteering for an event or coming to an event or saying, I would like to work with youth, whatever that might be. I think that those are really important. And continuing the conversation, you know, representation really matters. And knowing that there are people out there for youth in particular who identify similarly to them is also really important. So I think we in the community can also really continue to tell our stories and to connect with people and to show that there's a lot of people in the LGBTQ plus and Two-Spirit community that live in South Dakota, and that we don't want to go anywhere. And so having, you know, people supporting us in all of those manners is really important.
Definitely. Well, thanks so much for sharing, Cody. I so appreciate you coming onto our team, being welcome and willing to share your story and some statistics for us today on the podcast. And can't wait to continue working with you and Pride and seeing where we go in the future, because we have lots of work to do and lots to focus on as it relates to preventing suicide among our queer youth. But I so appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thank you, Joel. Yeah, the same way.
Thanks so much for listening. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review Great Minds wherever you listen to your podcasts. For more information about Lost and Found, go to resilienttoday.org. That's resilienttoday.org. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube @ Resilient Today. Until next time, do more and stay well.